This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by Mukti Organics, results-driven and award-winning skincare products made with certified organic ingredients and powerful actives.
You can buy the revised and expanded second edition of Mukti's best-selling book, Truth in Beauty, now for $89 at muktiorganics.com and retailers Amazon, Booktopia and QBD Books. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work, work. I'm Lou.
I'm Loz, and I'm starting things off with a good news story as always. Scientists calculated the energy needed to carry a baby. Shocker, it's a lot. Research shows that pregnancy demands 50,000 dietary calories over the course of 9 months. 96% of that energy is required entirely from the mother. FYI, that's roughly 23 litres of Messina ice cream.
That's the good news. I was like, where's the good news here? But the ice cream is the good news.
No, that is the good news. Because you know when people are pregnant and they're like, oh, I've just been eating so much stuff. Babe, go for it. You nourish yourself.
Yeah, nourish yourself with salted caramel ice cream every day for 9 months.
That you deserve it.
What do you, I don't even know this about you. What do you like eating when you're pregnant?
I was so sick with Sienna. I was so sick until around 16 weeks. Dave was 23 or 24.
Yeah.
That I actually couldn't stomach much. As in, I genuinely ate croissants, savoys, or cruscuts.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a savory gal too. I did crave pineapple with Ray. And funnily enough, that was mum's only craving with me.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, I'm craving pineapple. And she said,
you two kindred spirits, you.
Aren't we? But otherwise, it's french fries for mine. I just want to eat chips.
See, I wish I had something delicious like that, but mum are a bit beige, obviously.
I had so many chips, actually. Working from home, there was a milk bar around the corner. Fucking hell, they got sick of me by the end of that pregnancy, I'll tell you what. So, Lozzie, today, working families are more stressed than ever, a new report has found. That's the opposite of good news. We'll get into that. Kinkeeping is the invisible workload that women take on, and it's affecting the mental health, performance, commitment, and bandwidth of employees, experts say. And the poll today, Sex and the City vibes over here, because I recently rewatched it, I think, towards the end of pregnancy. I can't remember now, but I just can't get over that show. I actually Googled the other day, why can't I get over Sex and the City? Because I know it's a bit sort of irrelevant in the context now, but anyway, I love it. I digress. The poll today is about if you've been the Charlotte or the Miranda in terms of pregnancy. So Charlotte longed for a pregnancy, took ages for her to get. She ended up adopting before falling pregnant with her own child, her own biological child, I should say.
Yes.
On the flip side, Miranda unwantingly finds out she's pregnant from a one-night stand with her ex-partner, Steve, who ends up being her partner again. And I just wanted to know about the friendship dynamics that people go through with that, because most of us have been on one end of that scale. A lot have even been on both. So we'll find out about that too. Take it away, Lozzie.
Working families are more stressed than ever, a new report has found. According to a survey co-commissioned by Parents at Work and UNICEF, women took on the majority of caring and household duties. We hear this time and time again, nearly double that of men, despite working similar hours. The 2024 National Working Families Survey tracked 6,200 Australian working parents and carers between 2019 and 2024. I've said it time and time again, we always see research from the US, and I genuinely love that this is an Australian survey. Like, it melts my heart. Let's do more of this.
It melts
shit.
My heart. You feel warm and fuzzy towards this survey.
I do, because of those of you listening know how much I love research and data. And every time I'm Googling something or speaking to someone in that field or trying to find research, it's always from the US, and it's so annoying. Obviously, they're bigger, but come on, Aussies, let's lift.
Don't make me sing a song again.
The survey co-commissioned by UNICEF Australia found women continue to bear the majority of care and household duties, while men are less supported by employers to take parental leave. 74% of women found balancing work and family stressful in 2024 compared to 57% of men. And overall, men and women were more stressed about work-life balance in 2024 compared to 2019. Why do you think this is, Lou?
That's really interesting because we always say things are getting better, but that research or survey, that beautiful Australian survey that we love so much, flies in the face of that. Why is that the case? Is it cost of living? I hate to say it. Is it the cost of living pressures?
I almost think it might be because COVID was a time when it was socially acceptable to have more work-life balance. Oh, is this the right way to say it? Or like coming out of COVID was more acceptable to have work-life balance because people had been so stuck in those two being so intertwined for so long.
Yes, and then it was almost taken back off people when they started to return to normal life.
Yes, that's what I was about to say.
Really rude interrupting you, but I love where you're going with that, Lizzie. I also wonder if perhaps people had more like one-on-one time with their kids. Did you find that? And then all of a sudden you're getting back out and Sienna's doing X, Y, and Z. So you're all of a sudden cramming the everyday life back into your schedule when you were used to a lot of one-on-one time with your children, slow weekends where you literally couldn't do anything. And as you say, it was more socially acceptable to say at four, I've got to get offline. I have my child here. I can't commit to a full day. Whereas now there's not as many excuses.
No, and obviously people are pushed back into the office. Not pushed back. I mean, rightly so in some cases. I actually love being in the office, if I'm honest. Like, I thrive off human connection in person. I feel like you're more influential in person. I also think it's better for creating a team environment, a vibe, like feeling connected.
Yeah, it is.
But I also do think, yeah, if I was asked to be in the office 5 days a week or 4 days in my case, I'd find that very difficult.
That actually makes my chest tighten thinking about someone pushing me to do that. I know it happens, but and it's very privileged to sit here and say that, but that sounds stressful being in the office 5 days a week or 4 days a week.
Yes, and it made me think the other day, how did our parents do it? There was no takeaway really. Like you had a local Chinese and a local fish and chip shop that were probably more of a weekend vibe. You didn't have Uber Eats.
And there was more pressure on mums then too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how families where both parents worked full time in paid work did it. It's something I ask myself every day. We often laugh about the fact that parenting is still hard when you're lucky and you have a lot of support.
Yeah.
So when it actually is hard, I don't know how they do it.
Around 2 in 5 parents and carers said they had compromised their physical and mental health to balance work and family duties. I definitely fall into that bucket. I'm sure you do too. 1 in 4 respondents were concerned about what their colleagues and employers might think if they relied on flexible work arrangements.
It's so interesting that stat because lots of people have children and we all say that family matters more than anything. It still drives me mad the way the workplace really rules the rest of our lives instead of family ruling our lives.
I think sometimes it's workplaces and other times I think it's actually you. So for example, I am at a great workplace at the moment, incredibly flexible, beautiful team, so supportive, mothers, just incredible, lovely women in my team and men as well. But I've had a sick child and the pressure I feel, not even from the team, they're like, you've got to do what you can do. Don't stress about it. Work when you can. If you need to tend to your child, family comes first. But for me, it's like an ego-driven thing. I'm like, no, I want to be in the office. I need to be that.
That still comes from somewhere, though. If it's not directly from your team, it's still from being told that we always have to do our best in every aspect. You know, like it's still outward pressure. We just internalize it.
I just find it frustrating that I'm placing that pressure, and I'm sure other women are on themselves, and no one else is looking at me in my team or in my workplace like, oh, how dare she tend to her sick child, she should be in. They're all so supportive. It's just more like, I hate that I'm doing that.
Yeah, and it's also the letting go of control piece. It's
Yeah, that's
before
tricky.
you had kids, that wouldn't have been a thing. And then you're grappling with the fact that your time isn't, you can't rule your time anymore, which is such a frustrating part of parenthood.
60% of women wouldn't apply for jobs that didn't offer flexibility compared to 32% of men.
I've said it a million times, but it's the missing piece of the puzzle. We're getting better at working with women's careers when it comes to caregiving. We're not as good with the dads, and until we are,
Yep.
it's not going to be easier for mums.
Yep. 27% of respondents said they'd consider a 10% pay cut to be in a business with flexible work arrangements. So many of my girlfriends fall into that category.
Yeah.
Even I'm in the category.
Yeah, I would rather that.
Exactly. 48% of men took less than 1 month of paid parental leave for their first child. 91% of women took more than 4 months. 2 in 3 parents wish they could take more leave but return to work for financial reasons. pretty sure that's everybody. 2 in 3 surprised me. Actually, I'm surprised it isn't 3 in 3. 51% of men and 31% of women said they weren't eligible for longer paid parental leave due to their employer's policy. And surprisingly, for me anyway, men listed inflexible work hours as a key difficulty in balancing their personal commitments with their job. I think that's an interesting take from men when women would have the exact same problem. As in, I don't think that's a gender-based question or answer. I think everyone's in the same bucket.
That's like a universal.
I mean, the reason why women would find it difficult to balance personal commitments would be the exact same reason. It's just more so that women are expected to stay home and care for a sick child.
Yes, than a man.
Not expected. I mean, society expected in some ways than men. That is slightly changing, I'm sure, but it's going to take a long time to get there.
But you're right. Even with me, as I've said, I've been really lucky that I've probably been to Ray's daycare about maybe 8 times in the last 4.5 months since Posey was alive. And one of the educators the other day said something along the lines of, oh, mum's here. And I was a bit like, fuck you.
Shut up, Susan. So,
exactly. But if dad had only been in for the 8th time, 4.5 months, then they wouldn't have even questioned it. They'd probably be like, Dada, as like a positive. But it's me. It was like, oh, your mum's actually here.
Oh, God, I hate that. That would make me irate. Last couple of stats. Women took on the majority of caring and household duties, nearly double that of men, despite working similar hours, and a significant portion.
That pisses me off so much.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't find it like it's not a shock stat for me.
It is a shock for me when they've got similar working hours. I just don't understand that. Why?
Okay, I understand it. And I'll tell you why. Because, and this is something that I grapple with on a daily basis. I'll use my own personal situation actually to explain this. Ryan's income is more than mine. We work the same amount of hours, but because not just of the cost of living crisis, but because his wage is more of a risk to lose than my wage, essentially what ends up happening is that I place, and our family dynamic places more of an importance on him keeping that role. And then that means that my plate is loaded with more things to support that. And I know it's the wrong thing to say, and people will be like, oh, that's ridiculous, it should be 50-50. I agree with everybody that says that. That's not the dynamic that we're in. And I imagine many others in my situation would be in also.
But are you actually working the same amount of paid work hours?
Absolutely.
Wow. That's not fair then, because then you end up with so much more of the load.
I'm working 4 days, but I would say when I was working 5 days when I had Sienna, I would say there was no difference. So I don't think really the amount of hours I work makes it any different. Maybe I'd feel a little less guilty for doing all the household stuff if I worked less hours, but still, I'm like, nah.
I understand the risk of losing an income. I get what you mean. These things do halt progress because we just need money. But I don't know. It still doesn't sit well with me if you're working the same hours.
I agree with you. I'm exactly the same. I think, why should we place more importance on someone's time than the other person's time? Like,
yeah,
innately, that's what it comes down to. But if we look at what's at risk, Ryan losing his job is more of a risk.
But why would he lose his job if he did a bit of extra housework?
I think it's more the ability for him to succeed in his role. That, well, I mean, we haven't had this discussion, but he would probably like, I don't care. Like,
yeah,
I don't mind. But then, I mean, it's just this gender-based thinking that you have. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks like this, but I would assume that a lot of other women who are working full-time, working 4 days, whatever you might be working, have this kind of scale where more falls on them and their partner's doing the same hours.
Well, it's an interesting one. They've definitely said on the podcast, people that have worked full-time have definitely said on the podcast that they still wear more of the load.
Well, this is what the research shows.
It just doesn't sit well with me. I don't know the answer. I don't like it.
I don't know the answer either. I think reports like these are significant to track over time because it shows what direction we're moving. And it also shows to employers, what can you do as an employer that's going to alleviate the pressure that these stats are clearly showing to engage your employees, to retain them, and to make them happy for the hours that they are at work? Because they've got all these other things on their plate. You need to be an employer where your employee goes in and thinks, thank Christ, I'm at work. Not like,
yes,
oh, another day, another slog. Innkeeping is the invisible workload that women take on, and it's affecting the mental health, performance, commitment, and bandwidth of employees, experts say. I got sent this article and I genuinely felt like it spoke to my soul. Like, I have read very few articles, particularly in the career and women leadership space that have been so spot on.
That have struck at the heart as much.
I saw this and I was like, oh my God, I have to speak about this. We have to speak about this. It is so good. What is a kinkeeper, you may ask? Because I had no idea.
What is it?
So a kinkeeper is a family communicator who takes care of creating or carrying on family traditions, buying gifts for birthdays and holidays, coordinating medical care, and performing all sorts of emotional caregiving. It could also be someone who cultivates a sense of family solidarity or connectedness. And it can also be someone who is, in many ways, the family glue.
And it's always the fucking women.
Well, yes. It is a form of invisible labor dedicated to family bonding and magic making. I could not agree more on the magic making part. So, you know, all those like little things where you get like a beautiful birthday for Freddie, a beautiful birthday present for Freddie, and then you gift all of his friends goodie bags at the birthday. That is kinkeeping. That is like making an experience, not just for your family, but for somebody else's that connect to your family to make everyone feel good.
But it's also organizing the family get-togethers, like how Luce always will organize, for example, she'll take on that load. Or it's organizing, as you say, the birthday presents for the siblings, all that sort of stuff. It's such a heavy load.
Yep. So it could be things like creating or carrying on family traditions like Christmas, buying gifts for birthdays and holidays, coordinating medical care.
It never sits well with me that it's often the mums that organize Mother's Day. I pretty much gave it to my brother this year for our family. We just met up in a park and had coffee and croissants. And I made a point. My dad messaged me. Yeah, we're very French in my family.
I'm dead.
My dad messaged me being like, hi, Luce, what time's the Mother's Day catch up? I just wrote back, dunno, haven't organized it. Cam's organizing it. Check WhatsApp. This is not on me.
Yeah, you go, girl. I love that little fiery piece of you. It comes out every so often. It's so very good.
Do you though? Or is an angry little
I do. I love it. So research shows that more than 91% of kinkeepers are women. This article states that I thought that maybe men would have picked up more of this because of the technological pieces. Given that the ease of which we can now communicate via text and social media has become somewhat life-changing, what people have now found is that it's become obvious that we still have a huge time disparity on how women and men use their time. Fascinating. One fantastic analogy comparing family life to a play is this. This is in the article, and I was like, God, this is so spot on. I feel this in so many levels. Men are the actors and women are the production crew, the ushers, and everyone else working off stage. There's a lot of effort and time that goes into a play. But at the end of the day, when the play is done, people are not clapping for everything that they did not see.
Wow. That is powerful.
What do you think about it? Like, do you think it's true?
Oh, it's absolutely true. There's definitely things that I've shared over the years. If I think about Hayden and I at the start of our relationship compared to now, there's so many things that I absolutely would have done. I would have bought my mother-in-law's birthday present on behalf of us 10 years ago, whereas now, absolutely not. I love her and I'll put effort into things to thank her for what she does for our kids and for our family and whatnot. But I'm not leading that charge. I simply will not lead that charge. It makes me laugh that I still sometimes have to nudge the conversation to happen. It's so ironic that I try really hard to make sure Hayden leads these conversations so it's not always on my sister-in-law, your cousin, to do. She's one of four, for anyone that needs the context. She's one of four. There's one girl and three brothers in the dynamic. They're Loz's cousins, my siblings-in-law. And I push Hayden to start the conversation in terms of birthday presents or whatever it is so that Lucy's not the one leading that charge. But the irony of that is I'm pushing that anyway. So I'm still wearing that load.
Yeah. So the collective global experience of working from home might have actually made the juggle even worse for women. Research has shown that men fare far better from remote working than women. A study by, yet again, another American place, the Ohio State University, found that in husband and wife couples, women are more likely to use their flexible schedules to take on household chores and feel guilty if they don't.
The guilt thing is a big piece. I still wear more guilt than Hayden. Even last night, I was saying to you, I went to a wine store for a wine tasting with friends. And I had guilt that because I did that, we're a bit disorganized with the week in terms of the food shop that we might have sat down and done together online on a Sunday arvo, for example.
Yeah.
And I was feeling guilty that I don't have dinner organized tonight. And I was thinking to myself, why? I was the one that cooked dinner on Saturday and that gave us leftovers last night. Hayden also doesn't care. He's not annoyed at me that I haven't organized dinner tonight. He's going to make a risotto. But it's unbelievable that I still feel guilty about that. And I would say that I'm quite a liberal person in that sense of gender equality within our house.
Yes.
And I'm still the one feeling guilty. I still somewhere in me think that that's my responsibility.
Yep. So it says, kin keeping can be time consuming and emotionally heavy. It's exactly how you're feeling. When it's done from a place of resentment or obligation, that's when you can get into trouble. Like, is it a real choice? This article says, when kin keeping feels more like a chore, your mental health and relationships with family can start to suffer if this is the case. This has happened to me quite a couple of times. So I've got a birthday party on the weekend for a friend of Tina's from kinder. The difference between me buying the gift and Ryan buying the gift is genuinely the same.
What do you mean in terms of the difference?
Neither of us know the kid.
Yeah.
He could really do it, or I could do it. And that's when I start to feel resentful.
That's what I always make, Hayden. If it's his side of the friendship group or the family, he's in charge of birthday presents always.
Yeah, but what about it when it's neither? So this is like a kinder friend. So I'm like, to be real, like, it makes no difference who does it. I just don't want to.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, we haven't faced that yet, but that will be interesting.
I feel like that's when resentment starts to build for me, because I get what you're saying about your friends versus his friends.
But even so, I still had to communicate that. I still had to say, it's this person's birthday. That's your friend. You go get the gift.
Yeah.
What would have happened if I didn't say that? I'm not sure.
See? So if you or your family is a kin keeper, a few strategies can help to prevent emotional burnout, the expert said. A common point of tension is when one family member thinks another is taking on unnecessary work. For example, do the cupcakes really need to be homemade?
Love that.
Often, however, cupcakes aren't really about cupcakes, which is my problem. Like, when I say I have an issue, it's not really the issue at hand. It's like the underlying sentiment of the issue.
Yeah.
Cupcakes represent a custom from your childhood that you want to pass on, or they stand for something that you didn't have growing up and want to give your own children. Even seemingly banal, is that the right?
Even seemingly banal
tasks can be rich with emotional significance. And if you're not getting the support you need, start by explaining to family members the why you do things the way you do. If we can just take a step back, spend 5 minutes on our why, it literally changes everything. So important.
That's an interesting one. I definitely give up on all of the extra things. For example, I used to take food with me if my mother-in-law and father-in-law, your auntie and uncle, again, for anyone listening for the first time, Michelle and E, if they're looking after Ray, I used to pack his food. Michelle genuinely gets so much joy out of making Ray's favorite things. She's always got too much food in the fridge. And I hate that I'm even referring to the food in the house as Michelle's, but she's a good cook. E cooks too, but she is the one that cooks for the babies. But I have totally stopped taking food with me. And sometimes I feel guilty about what it says about me as a mum, like making no effort. Is she a good mum? All of those sorts of things run into your head. But I've just forgiven myself for any guilt that I come up with that, because Michelle, for the most part, won't even give the food I've given anyway. She wants to give them her food.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing that I've just dropped. It's not worth it. It's like, the cupcakes don't need to be homemade. I do not need to bring a tray of food for Ray when it's not even going to be touched. And Michelle genuinely doesn't care.
Yeah. I think the why can be really helpful though for situations where, like, for example, growing up as a child, one of our family traditions was going to see Christmas lights. And I, as a kid, loved it. I still remember it. It's like a key childhood memory for me. I always used to think I get to...
Poor memory, I think they say on TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So I used to love it because I was like, oh, I get to stay up late. Like, it was really dark and really late because it was summer. You know, it doesn't get dark till late. And I remember getting, like, all rugged up and getting out and seeing all the houses. And because I loved that, it's something that is really important to me to do with my children. But if it isn't in context for Ryan, for example, or your partner or whoever, it can feel really irritating. Like,
yeah.
So here's a classic example of the why and why it matters. Last year, we went to go Christmas lighting. The kids are a bit feral. It was a really busy year. Ryan had work stuff. I had stuff on. We were trying to find a date. And Rye was like, does it really matter? Like, can we just do another time? I'm like, no, do you know what? It really matters to me because A, B, C, D.
Yes.
I understand that you think the kids won't remember it and they might not. But even if they don't, I will.
I will.
And I need to have that as like a continuation of the good things that I had.
It's important to you.
Exactly. He was like, all right, I get it. All right, no problem.
I like that version of the why. I was thinking about it more from, I guess, the cupcake or that extra effort that you don't need to put in point of view. So even that, though, is really important. I like this analogy now of asking why. I think a lot of the time, I hate to say it, but I reckon a lot of mums still just want to look like the best mum that does it all, and it pisses me off.
Yeah.
So I think the why can actually be really interesting in that, are you making those cupcakes because secretly deep down you think that makes you a good mum?
Yes.
Or why are you doing it?
Exactly. Very, very valid point. So just to like round off this article, because it was excellent, this is the key takeaway. And I think it's important to communicate to your partner, to chat about it with your girlfriends, even just to think about it yourself.
Yeah.
It can make a world of difference. So it says, if your partner or another member of your family is the kin keeper, most likely it's you, be mindful that this can be thankless work. Simply expressing gratitude for that care and acknowledging how much work it involves can help prevent kin keeper burnout. And by all means, offer to help. So not only will it take the load off a loved one, but you will probably benefit from it too. Kinkeeping can be a powerful way to nurture your own relationships. And research suggests that relationship quality has an enormous impact on health, happiness, and longevity. Think about what's at stake. The article says, the quality of your relationships is built in these small moments.
I would almost say kinkeeping is one of the most exhausting things ever. As I'm also one of four, like I was just describing my sister-in-law, I'm one of four and the only girl. And I reached a point where I was just thinking to myself and told all my brothers, like, I'm not doing all of fucking this. I'm not buying all the birthday presents. You can sort yourselves out. It is absolutely draining. So I think acknowledging it is the first step, and then trying to take off some of those tasks and identifying the why, what is actually important here and what isn't, and get rid of those things where there's no real good reason and keep those things in where there is a beautiful reason attached to it.
Absolutely. Tell your partner that you're the kin keeper today. That's an action point off the back of this potty.
Yeah.
If you've listened, tell him what it means. Tell him what you're doing and ask for thanks, man. Be like, look, a simple thank you would be nice. Otherwise, you do it, or her, whoever. Whatever the situation is,
please just try and take one thing off your kin keeping list. Give it to them.
Exactly.
Maybe two, maybe 10.
Lou, we've spoken about Mukti products before, and you have recently interviewed her as a guest for Ready or Not. She is such a wealth of knowledge, not only when it comes to career and motherhood, but also when it comes to wellness and beauty.
She absolutely is. I can't believe what she knows and what she's learned over the years. She has an unbelievable motherhood and career story too, which will be coming to the podcast soon. And we've been lucky enough to read the second edition of her book prior to its launch. It's called Truth in Beauty, and it's a practical, easy to follow guide designed to help you navigate the confusing world of beauty, see past clever marketing tricks. Lozzie, we always talk about that you're a marketer's dream, so this helped us with that, and adopt healthier alternatives with realistic and practical tips.
I find it really overwhelming looking at ingredients on beauty products and not knowing what dangerous chemicals might be inside. I love that this book gives you a guide to deciphering those labels and verifying marketing and product claims, whilst also giving you a breakdown of all the different skin types and how to nurture your own skin naturally at any age.
The book also covers the ultimate beauty upgrades that don't cost a thing, which is especially appreciated at the moment when everything is so expensive. You can buy the revised and expanded second edition of Mukti's best-selling book, Truth in Beauty, now for $89 at muktiorganics.com and retailers Amazon, Booktopia, and QBD Books. So, Lozzie, in Community this week, we are talking about season 4 of Sex in the City. Miranda realizes that she is pregnant from a one-night stand with Steve after a bit of a period of not being together, a bit of a shag. I'm pretty sure Samantha refers to it as a mercy fuck, not my words, hers. And poor Charlotte is sitting there at the breakfast table, brunch table, wherever they meet. And Miranda says, I couldn't think of a worse time to tell you this. She's talking about what's wrong with her, why can't she get pregnant, blah, 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 blah. And Miranda tells Charlotte that she's pregnant. Charlotte is devastated, leaves the table, and a murky time in their friendship ensues. They find their way out of it. It's really beautifully done, I think. It portrays a dynamic that is very common, maybe not to the extent that it's shown on Sex and the City in terms of how dramatic it is. A lot of us have been there. A lot of us have either been the person for whom pregnancy came quite naturally and easily, and they've had that friend longing for the same thing, or the other way around. And it's not even necessarily that most people's surprise pregnancies were unwanted like Miranda, but it still can be a bit of a shock if pregnancy does come easily. Nowhere near as bad, obviously, as the opposite, but it can be a bit like, holy fuck, I am accidentally pregnant. What do I do next? Even if it is slightly welcomed. So I wanted to ask the pollers all about it. The first question was, I have been A, the Miranda, B, the Charlotte, or C, both. What do you think was the most common? So Miranda being the one that had the surprise pregnancy, Charlotte being the one longing and seeing their friends fall pregnant easily, or C, I have been both.
I think both.
I thought it would be this too. It was actually B, unfortunately, people being the Charlotte, aka longing for a baby and trying to fall pregnant for some time. So 45% of people sit in that camp. So if you are in that camp, our heart breaks for you, but you are not alone. A, aka the Miranda, falling pregnant a little bit unexpectedly and maybe wanting that pregnancy or maybe not. That's 31%. And C, I thought both would be the most too, 23%.
Oh, there you go.
So the next question, have you been pregnant while a close friend navigated a difficult fertility road? Yes or no? What do you think was the most common answer?
I think a lot of people have been.
Yeah. What percentage?
I think there's always someone, oh, maybe like 75%.
Really close. 81% of people. So 4 in 5 people have experienced being pregnant while someone they really cared about could not get pregnant, which is really hard dynamic. Obviously the opposite, no, was 19%. Next question, have you navigated a difficult fertility road while a best friend was pregnant? What do you think the percentages were for yes and no there?
I also think it's high. I reckon what percentage? Oh God, 70.
So yes here was 41%, no was 59%.
Oh.
So that was an interesting one. Confuses me a little bit because we had a lot of people at the top saying that they had been through it. So almost even there. So we've had more people in our community experience being the pregnant person and watching their friends struggle with fertility, which is obviously really hard on both sides. So the next question, if you've been on either side, did you have a conversation to open up about your different challenges? How many people do you think said yes, or what percentage?
I hope more than 50% said yes. That would be my hopeful answer.
Yeah, so 66% said yes, which I think is probably pretty bang on what I would have guessed. About 2/3 of people are comfortable opening up.
Yep.
And then no is 34%. I wish there was a little bit more depth here. I would like to know the people that did struggle to have those conversations, if they were the ones that were pregnant. My hunch would be that it's harder to bring up if you are the one in the lucky situation, in inverted commas.
I agree.
I would find that harder to bring up because you don't want to pity the person, but you want to be there for them. And I find that a really interesting sort of dynamic to navigate.
Yep.
Then I said, if yes, so if you did have these conversations, what helped and what didn't? Here are some of the answers. Pretty much everyone, I had so many messages saying it helped to be told the news via text of someone else's pregnancy. So, and also don't assume that they don't want to know. Don't let them find out through the grapevine. Tell them via text before you start to announce it to everyone else. Someone else said, ask them how they would like to be told if you aren't. I mean, you can only do that, obviously, if you're not yet pregnant, or I guess you could be more broad about it, but I think that's really great. So this person said that their friend did prefer it via the text message method. Someone else said being vulnerable and allowing each other's lived experience to be shared, listened to and felt. I think that's a really important one because, as we said, obviously it can be much more gut-wrenching to be on the side where you're struggling to conceive, but we do need to acknowledge that for some people, at a surprise pregnancy is life altering and quite scary.
Yeah.
So it's worth acknowledging on both sides of the fence. And then one more here, which I think is great, self-awareness on the part of the pregnant person. So you can have the conversations and you can have your excitement and all of those things, but just be aware how that person might be feeling and in what context, I guess, you do share and how you do share your pregnancy. So we actually also received a voice note, which we're going to drop in now, because another interesting dynamic here is in the workplace, being told that someone is pregnant at work when you're trying is really difficult to hold your nerve and be happy for that person if you're having struggles. And the other interesting layer of that is you might not want work to know that you're trying to conceive. So we're going to play this clip now.
I spoke to my counselor about it because I was surrounded by so many people getting pregnant at work. I reckon there were five, and they were all like, two were LSAs I worked with, my teaching assistant. Another one, like others with staff members. And I'm working with a girl at the moment who's finding it really challenging as well. And at the time when I was doing IVF, there were another two people at my workplace who were going through it. So I went to counselling through Janaya, the fertility clinic, and I was like, what do I do? Because I feel so bad. Because I'll be sitting in a staff meeting and my vice principal, he's like, my wife and I are having a baby soon. And I'm like nearly about to bawl my eyes out. And then you go to another massive staff meeting and they're like, so-and-so is also pregnant. And I'm just looking around like, I know there are two other people going through IVF that I'm helping support at the moment. What are they feeling right now? Probably not the greatest. So my advice is that with the person who's pregnant's permission, I would totally send out an email if I was management and say, just want to let you know, so-and-so is pregnant. We'll be celebrating them at the next staff meeting. Just wanted to let you know that you're aware. And or also, I would, you know, preface there's going to be a morning tea or something, just so that you don't walk into it and you're like blindsided. Because there was certain times where I was just like about to pull my eyes out because I'm like, oh God, I had no idea that this was a thing. And if I was prepared for that, I would have looked genuinely happier for the person than what it appeared that I looked absolutely just shell-shocked and upset. And it's not that I was upset for them. I was super excited. But it was that I was just like really sad for myself. And so you can feel both feelings at once. And I think it's really important to acknowledge both of those feelings, but also not to bring that up at their time of joy. And so if you get a text message beforehand or an email or something like that beforehand, you can totally go breathe your thing, do all the feelings that you need to feel, and then you can move on. And when it's time to celebrate, you're like in the headspace and you're able to do that with a bit more grace, I think. So that's just my tip in terms of people like being at different stages. That's just really hard and you just got to accept that that's just the way it is. And unfortunately, that's just life, right? You can't choose or plan these things as much as everyone would like to. So yeah, they're my top tips. I hope they're helpful. And I was really excited. I'm like, I can contribute to this one because I love listening to your podcast because I think I'm going to need all these tips hopefully one day. And it's great advice. And I've got lots of friends in that space, so it helps me to support them. But this one's a big one for me. So thanks for letting me share.
So I guess the majority of people are saying, give someone a heads up, be honest with them and acknowledge what they're going through if you're trying to navigate this space. Next question, did these conversations ever go wrong or cause friction? Now, I really didn't want to ask this in a way where I'm trying to create gossip fodder, but I did want to know what people might be able to learn from other people's experiences. One person said, I lost a baby at 13 weeks and had a friend who never even acknowledged it to me in person. That killed me. It drove me crazy because all I wanted to do was speak about it. I know not everyone feels the same though, and it is awkward for others, but it consumed my thoughts constantly and found it hard to just go back to talking about normal things. We went out for dinner and she made me guess who in our friendship group was pregnant as a game. I told her I didn't want to, as I was feeling very fragile and desperate for my pregnancy, but she pushed me and it ended up being her who was pregnant. Oh, I actually feel nearly like I'm going to cry for this person. Wow. It caught me so off guard and I didn't react well. She just didn't understand or have any idea how difficult it was for me. She texted me that night saying, I just wanted to share my exciting news with you, etc. I responded the next day and said, I'm sorry, but I'm really struggling at the moment. And she never even responded. That's what not to do. You cannot treat someone that's going through fertility challenges like that. I'm so sorry that person went through that. Next question. If you have either had the not exactly wanted or surprised pregnancy or the difficult fertility journey, what do you think people around you didn't understand about what you were going through? Someone said maybe the amount of appointments and how totally consuming assisted fertility is. Next one, how deeply in it I was. It was my whole universe and I felt so silly at how consuming it was. I even felt that way when Ray took 8 months to conceive, which we didn't need assistance and it's not that long in the grand scheme of things, but it started to consume me after about 5 month point. So I totally get that person.
Yeah.
Another person said the sheer hell of prolonged infertility. So that's something we can be a little bit more understanding of. If you have been the one to navigate a difficult fertility journey, what is the best things that people did for you to support? One person said, I just like to be treated normally. Sometimes you can sense the pity otherwise. I think this is where it becomes difficult to know how to support someone.
Yes.
Because some people might really want to talk about it and sit in that emotion. Other people want to get on with it. So I think maybe it's like that question of, do you want advice or do you want to be heard? You know how people suggest saying that when someone's struggling with something? Maybe that's something that we can say in these moments is, do you want to sit in this emotion or do you want to not really acknowledge it and just move on?
Yeah.
Because people are different and some people don't want to sit in that advice. Someone else said not to give advice. That's for the specialist. Best thing is to listen and show empathy. Amen. Do not ask them if they've had the fucking herbs or done anything else like that lady on Sex and the City does for Charlotte. Someone else said hold space, check in, approach topics with curiosity and sensitivity, which I think is a really good one. Last one. Held and gave me space, checked in and just let me be sad if I needed to be. So I think that's bang on.
Relevant.
Best advice for telling a close friend you're pregnant if they've been trying for some time. So again, the resounding answer here was to message them.
Yep.
And someone just said to make sure you do it in private. So don't do it in a public setting. So maybe you could go so far as to make sure it's not even a group text. It needs to be something really private. Just give them that moment. Someone wrote to me an extended piece on this along the lines of, because I don't want to be sad when you announce it to me. I love you and I care about you and I want to be joyful for you. But if you catch me off guard, there's a chance that my emotions will take over and then that person feels like shit because they've rained all over your parade.
Yes.
So I think that's a really important piece to this. It's not so much that you need to protect my emotions, but I also want to protect yours because I want to be happy for you in your pregnancy. No one wants someone else to not be pregnant just because they aren't at the moment.
I mean, pregnancy and fertility are such personal, deeply personal issues and there's still such a taboo.
Journeys.
Yeah, journeys. And there's such a taboo around talking about it. And just because you got pregnant really easily one time and maybe communicated that, I think it doesn't necessarily happen the second time or the third time or however many times you try. You just need to be very careful on how it is communicated. I think the texting is a great thing. I think more people need to do that just out of common heads up, like just to let you know we're pregnant, super excited, can't wait to chat to you about it soon. Then you've given that person, regardless of where they are, a heads up to be like, okay, I know what's coming. I can process it in my own way.
And lastly, do you feel comfortable having these difficult conversations with your close friends? So the options were yes, sort of, and not really.
Oh, yes, 50%.
Yes, only, oh, well done, 51%, sort of 33%, not really 16%, which I can understand. It can be a really hard thing to navigate. So I totally get that. One person did go a little bit more in depth, and I just want to close with this. For me, if you can, I didn't want to be told in person. I am so, so happy for you and excited for you and I love you, but I'm so sad for me and I don't want my sadness to overshadow how happy I truly am for you. And trust me, it will. I cried at friends when they told me in person and I beat myself up for it, but I really could not control my emotions with all of the hormones I was taking and just how sad I felt after the losses and journey I was on to get and stay pregnant. Friends who told me privately, I so appreciated. I cried it out in private and was prepared when I saw them. If it's not possible, I get it. In one instance, it wasn't for me when I was telling a friend who was then struggling with fertility when I did get pregnant. I just held so much space for her and we cried together and I knew that her sadness wasn't at me. It was for her. I actually cried one day when my friend who was heavily pregnant came over. I was working from home and she just dropped in. She was on mat leave. And I cried to her about 6 months into trying for Ray. And I felt so bad because I was saying the exact same thing. This has nothing to do with you being pregnant. I'm just sad for me. And she, luckily I knew that she would never take that to heart. She's a really pragmatic person, but it does feel like shit. So I think holding space for someone when you are on that other end is really important. Thanks so much to that person for sharing that. That wraps up this segment, Lozzie. Give me a good tip.
I got a tip actually from a new colleague. Excellent tip. Mealtimes can be super rushed and stressful when you get home from work and your kids no doubt want food like ASAP. So
yesterday
we've talked about, we've talked about all the things of like frozen meals, meal prep, blah, 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 which I'm all about as well. But sometimes when you get home from work late and you're rushing, even to like defrost a meal or like heat it up in the microwave takes a couple of minutes. So a tip that she gave me was cut up some veggie sticks prior, shove them in the fridge, whip them out with some hummus and like a couple of sakatars or pekish or whatever, shove them on the table. And then at least you know that your kids are eating a couple of veggies before they get their meal. I'm like, clever. Don't know why I'd never done that.
Great. Smart. The problem we have in our household, though, is we get Ray to eat snacks when he gets home because he's all unhinged and being cute and wild.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't eat bloody dinner.
But this is the good thing. At least if it's hummus and...
At least I've had the veg. Yeah.
Yeah. At least I'm having some form of like nutrient.
Yeah. As opposed to like giving them a muesli bar and then thinking, oh, you haven't really had anything dinner-wise.
Exactly.
My tip comes back to something you've shared before, and it's the idea of not talking about yourself badly in front of your daughter, because if they look anything like you, or even if they don't, they might take on some of that relationship to self. The other day, Ray and I were sort of whacking our tummies and just playing a bit of like a tummy game. Hee, whack your tummy. Very cute, you know, in the bath, just having one of those moments. And then the other day he was watching me get ready. I was new, just got out of the shower and I whacked my tummy and I was like, look, it's mummy's tummy. And I nearly said mummy's fat tummy because my tummy is just, you know, a little bit big after having a baby, which is fine.
Yeah.
And I paused and I stopped myself from saying it because I thought this could either... We could do one of two things, or it could do both of these things. It might impact his relationship to his self and how he feels about his physical self. And something that I've never thought of is it might, if he is attracted to women and ever in a male-female relationship, it might lead him to think that it's okay to treat women like that and that women should be looking good.
Very valid point.
So I stopped myself. So I want to take that, I guess, that sort of meme, reel, whatever we've seen go on about, you know, don't talk about yourself that way in front of your daughters. Don't talk about that way about yourself in front of anyone, any child, because it could do a multitude of things. And love thyself. That's my tip.
Love thyself. Yes.
I think, therefore I am. Who said that? I think it's Socrates. I don't know.
Oh, go girl.
I actually think that's wrong. I did philosophy in year 10.
I'm all for it.
All right, Lozzie, wrap us up on that note. I'll go check if it was in fact Socrates. It probably wasn't.
As always, if you have loved listening to today's episode, leave us a positive review, please. Every review really helps. Follow us and be sure to check us out on Instagram at readyornot.pod.
Yeah, so we put those polls up on a Sunday night and I'm getting a really good rhythm of making sure it's always on a Sunday night. So if you ever want to contribute to what we're talking about in these episodes, get us there.